Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Celebrating 50 years of service in Tuscaloosa and West Alabama, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. At Townsend Honda, with new cars in short supply, they've purchased more than 200 quality pre-owned vehicles. And every one of them goes through a 118-point inspection before it's offered for sale to you. Most of those vehicles are either Honda Certified Pre-Owned or Townsend Certified Pre-Owned, and the dealership also has a fully staffed parts and service department to assist you beyond the purchase day throughout the life of your vehicle. That includes Saturday service, which is available until 1 p.m., even during football season. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Honda salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. John Washburn swears that he remembers me when I visited his restaurant Otto's 7 or 8 years ago. While I'm still not quite convinced, my Otto's German Bistro memory was one of the reasons I wanted to return to Fredericksburg, Texas. The town was settled in the 1800s by German immigrants and still retains a lot of German character, and Otto's was a standout on the culinary scene even then. With a focus on local sourcing, in-house charcuterie and pantry staples, and a cocktail list that would be at home in a forward-thinking Austin bar. Since my first visit, John, along with his wife Evelyn, have expanded their business footprint immensely as side street hospitality, including a coffee shop, an inn and event venue, and a soon-to-be-open Italian restaurant. Their work is at once very rooted in place without being constrained by it, and they've added a fresh, youthful quality to Fredericksburg without disregarding its traditional past. Welcome to the Southern Fork, you two.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. I'm getting caffeinated through one of your many businesses here in Fredericksburg today, but I mean, it is breathtakingly beautiful this week. The sky I put on Instagram is Texas blue bonnet blue during the day. It's still Texas hot, which I'm disappointed that you didn't work that out for me. But otherwise, it's really, really gorgeous. I understand why you live here.
Yeah. Growing up here, I think I took the weather for granted and then spent about a year and a half in Salt Lake City, Utah for college, and snow from September until May really gave me an appreciation for these beautiful hill country days. And I know John spent his university years in Glasgow, so
Scotland, yes. Pennsylvania.
Oh, right.
but probably equally miserable. I know I'm not
less
supposed
snow,
to
but
throw shade on anyone. So I won't throw shade on Pennsylvania, but yeah, I mean the summers here are actually quite nice. I grew up in Dallas and that was 104 degrees and 90% humidity and
a lot of reflective glass buildings.
Yes.
And concrete.
Yeah.
And asphalt. So
it does make a little malls. Bit of a difference having, you know, like dry heat, which everyone always talks about dry heat in the summer, but it's slightly less miserable than other areas of Texas.
Well, this is just such a fascinating place. And this is the second time I've been here. And I've wanted to come back because I think Southern Fork listeners, they might not be aware of like a German enclave, German history in Texas. And this would be considered Central Texas, right?
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. It's a whole country. So I keep saying that. But it is, y'all. It takes forever to get across the state.
We can't get the hell out of Texas. No, and we were our own country. That is true.
That is true. The Republic. But that kind of interesting background, this is where you've chosen to really anchor your professional career and also your personal lives, raising children here. 7 years ago when I was here, I ate at a place that had just opened named Otto's. And I remember I was fascinated because the charcuterie was really good. I think at that time you were doing some things like that, but you had like really forward thinking cocktails. And I remember thinking, this is not like the rest of the place. And of course, when I came back, here we are and we spent time at Otto's, but it's modern, but still German influenced. How do you begin to be modern and keep that foundation of tradition? Because a lot your businesses here are beautiful, they're modern, but it's not old school, but it's not disrespectful. It's not like we just want to do something different.
Yeah, I think that sometimes just by doing something traditional, you become modern. It's that kind of paradoxical loop of just, you know, honoring the traditions and not trying to reinvent the wheel or, you know, get too crazy with plate presentations and, but also just caring about the product that goes into it, about, you know, the process of making everything from scratch and things like that. So I wouldn't necessarily call us modern or traditional. It's just kind of being a bistro, which of course is a French, you know, French concept, but the idea of just timelessness and,
hospitality, I think is just so important with everything that we've done. Like John is saying, just really paying homage to the people that have come before us. Because we're not, you know, we're not the first people to make a schnitzel. We're not going to be the last people to make a schnitzel. You know, we didn't invent how coffee was made or roasted. But we can definitely put our own touch on it.
I know both of you are well traveled and you could have put your businesses anywhere. Evelyn, you're a native and John, your family purchased and became part of the community, purchased this location that we're sitting in, right?
Yes.
Hoffman House. And so you have ties to here. What keeps you? I mean, because how many of them now? Five? Six, four.
I always lose count, which, I mean, it sounds like a you know, good problem to have. But yeah, we're opening our sixth business, but okay. Not six restaurants, just kind of a mix.
Right.
Yeah.
Mix of things. But I mean, that's a lot of businesses to anchor in a 12,000 person town. Why do you think Fredericksburg is a great place to anchor your professional careers?
Yeah. I mean, it's growing. There's a good proximity to Austin, San Antonio. There's the climate that we talked about, which is, again, in you know, the summer slightly less miserable than the rest of the state, but also just beautiful seasons. And it's a good mix. It's not necessarily a small town Texas that you would see kind of, you know, on TV, you know, 2,000 person small town, but it's in a really good middle area of being large enough to have amenities and support, you know, small restaurant group like ours, but also a good place to raise your kids. We're not a suburb, you know, of Austin or San Antonio either. Like you can kind of guess like Round Rock, which is not a bad place to be, but it's kind of got the best of both worlds, I would say.
Yeah. And I would definitely add that I think, you know, the community support that we get in so many different ways. You know, we have an incredible hospital here, which for being a rural community is still, you know, 100% nonprofit. That's kind of crazy. And a lot of people would be like, well, you know, why does a hospital matter to a hospitality group? But people get sick. You know, people get hurt. You really want to have...
they don't know how to use knives. It can be bad.
Oh, been there, done that.
I think everybody who's worked in a restaurant has seen that scene once or twice.
Yeah, we often give rides to staff to the hospital.
That is like my... That's one of my jobs, and the ambulance.
Probably 4 times a year.
Something like that. But even like our Chamber of Commerce is incredible. I think of everything that like Penny McBride and those folks do there, you know, just promoting business. The CVB, I think, super forward thinking. Our Convention and Visitors Bureau, just getting the word out that there is more to Fredericksburg than what you would expect. And then really, I mean, our local community of farmers and ag workers, you know, have really been able to kind of preach our gospel along with us. So we're very fortunate to have their support as well.
So there's a pride of place. I noticed there's a lot of talk about, you know, local peaches and honey. We were sitting together at dinner the other day. You were telling a story about what you grew up eating and that you didn't see that in restaurants, right?
Yeah, like, that's correct.
So
yeah.
What are some of the things that your grandmother made?
Yeah, well, I come from a Mexican family. It's interesting how even then, now, like, you start seeing all the, like, birria and the crazy tacos that everybody, you know, is making, and that you see all over Instagram. And I'm like, oh man, I was eating that before it got cool. I was watching some girl on Instagram doing, or I think it was like a TikTok video on making fideo. And I was like, we've been doing that for like ever. But growing up in Fredericksburg, I also got to experience a lot of the German food ways through my friends and family and their families. And so getting to watch them make sausage, or jerky in the different ways they would process the deer that they would hunt, was something that's really remarkable, and have a lot of respect for that. Sauerkraut, I felt like everybody always had, you know, crocks of sauerkraut going, and it was always a contest to see, you know, who could open it and like smell it without like being like, oh, this is gross. And now we're like, oh yeah, fermentation, you know? So that was fun. I always loved Spätzle as a kid. I don't know anybody who doesn't love Spätzle. Schnitzel. It was all just fantastic. Rye bread, ugh, love that.
There's good bread here. There is good bread here and good pastries. And John, you know, when you're thinking about building a vibe for your restaurants and your businesses, how does that kind of flow of different community? Central Texas is three different ecological environments coming into one right here. You've got Mexican traditions, you've got German traditions, you have Tex-Mex traditions, which is completely different. Mm-hmm. And then you have Texas tradition, which is different. What kind of creative license does that give you as far as business building? But also, what fences do you feel that you often put to keep yourself from just kind of flying off the edge?
I think the most important thing to me is to not hijack any kind of, I know there's, you know, cultural appropriation is, you know, a massive issue in our industry, but trying not to, you know, again, hijack a culture or a concept or anything like that, and just being kind of true to what it is. So everything that we do comes from a place of a genuine desire to have an interesting concept that I would want to go to, which I know sounds a little bit kind of selfish. But.
Well, no, a lot of restaurateurs say, I basically needed this in my town, so I built it.
That's exactly it. But then you can't go to it is the problem. So you build it and it's successful and then,
you're stuck.
Yeah. You can't go in as a guest to your own restaurant and actually enjoy yourself. It's kind of impossible. You know, for example, with the, with Caliche Coffee and Ranch Road Roasters, that was a friend of mine who started the coffee roasting business. And then he moved to Orcas Island in Washington State. And so you know, I ended up buying the business from him, but trying to honor all the work that he put into the brand, into the community building, and take it to the next level without trying to be too big or trying to be over conceptualized, for mm-hmm. example. So again, I know authenticity is a term that's thrown around a lot, but I do think that's the key.
Well, and Eddie Hernandez, who is a chef that I respect, he says everything is really authentic to you. Mm-hmm. So we're all these combinations of different things, our own 100%. Personal histories, our own likes and dislikes. You know, when you were starting Otto's and you were saying, we're going to make our own sausage, we're going to do our own sauerkraut and that kind of thing that Evelyn grew up enjoying and her friends' houses, you didn't see in restaurants. You saw big square trucks pulling up to the back of restaurants and kind of pulling out cans, right? And so how did you start to create that culture and attract the talent that was going to get good sauerkraut made for you on the daily?
I think that was Yoho. A lot of that was...
Yeah, our original chef, Adam Yoho, and I, along with another friend, Adam Emer, who's our sommelier, which is funny to think about having a sommelier for a 20-seat German bistro. But the three of us we're passionate about food and wine and really just the whole package. And so I think that attracted the right people. And honestly, the kitchen staff that's there right now, they have a really, really strong passion for quality. And so they'll check the sauerkraut. They will, make sure the schnitzel is pounded out correctly and the sausage is made, with the right coarse grind and things like mm-hmm. that. And I think it's just about consistency and just the daily grind of making sure the quality is there every single day. And then people just come on board and they see this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm. I think they take great pride in what they do because they do know that it is different. We've all been in those jobs, where you just kind of show up, throw something on the plate, or, just show up, kind of like do the work and then leave. Mm-hmm. And
that happens a lot in high volume places.
Oh, 100%.
It's just really hard to stop that from happening to some extent.
Yeah. And it's across industries. I mean, mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I think they really do take pride in what they do, and they take pride in the product that they work with and the relationships, that we've been able to build. It's crazy to think that Otto's is going on its 10th year. And I really think that so much is a story of, the people that have worked for us and have been part of that team and have believed in, this crazy idea that John had.
But also a lot of our kitchen staff, they migrated to the States, but they come from agrarian communities in their home countries. And so it's not like they're unfamiliar with, from farm to table mm-hmm. and what that process looks like. So there's, it's not foreign at all to know how something is grown and the care that it takes to produce that, that food.
Yeah. And I mean, and our beverage teams are really incredibly talented. And I think also so passionate about what they do.
And I just have to say yes, yes to all of that. But specifically the other night, I mean, we had sausage, we had, a schnitzel, we had, what is that, Flammkuchen?
Flammkuchen, yes. Yeah.
That was so good. It's like a crispy cracker crust pizza. Y'all know that's kind of hot right now, right? But it just was delicious, and I think there was like a balsamic reduction on there. I mean, it was just savory and so good with a cocktail and so good with a glass of crisp white wine. But after all of that food, our server came out and said, y'all aren't doing dessert. And we were like, no, cheese is fine. We have the best cheesecake in the world. And I was like, cheesecake? That is a really bold statement. We've got to have it. It was the best cheesecake we've ever had. We were like, what is this? Did she just put a spell on us? And cheesecake at a German restaurant in Central Texas. What is going on with that cheesecake?
It kind of makes sense,
because I don't even care, right? And I don't even really love cheesecake. I'm always like, cinnamon roll, yes, bring it. Cheesecake, I'll save the calories.
Yeah, because I'm not a I do not have a sweet tooth, and so that cheesecake was inspired by just having some cambazola, which is a mix of gorgonzola and camembert. So it's kind of like a soft blue cheese. So we had it laying around, that we put it on our flammkuchen, the aforementioned flatbread pizza. And yeah, so we just decided to mix it into the cheesecake one day just for fun, because I always go for a cheese course as dessert rather than anything sweet. And yeah, it just turned out to be a hit.
And then you put the vanilla anglaise or whatever.
Yeah, the creme anglaise.
Creme anglaise on the top. And so it adds that sweetness, but phenomenal. Phenomenal. And fluffy.
Yes. And gluten-free, yeah, because the crust is, you know, nuts.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, it's good for you.
We didn't even talk about the crust being pecans, which is such a Texas ingredient. And, you know, something I'm very, very into, pecans. But to be like this wonderful crust. And yeah, there was so much going on. I was like, I need that recipe. Not that I'm ever going to make it. I just basically want you to ship one to me a week. Yeah. For the rest of my life.
We can make it happen.
Yeah. And then I won't be able to travel anymore. I'll just be ill after a while. Just
run the extra mile every morning to burn it off.
It might take two. It might take two. I love a cheese course, but I don't know if I should eat cheesecake every day. But anyway, it was super delicious. And I think it's a fun kind of hidden example of the kind of work that happens. It's very collaborative, right? Mm-hmm. And so, in a situation like this, where you're about to open something that's Italian, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what region of Italy is really your main inspiration?
So we get that question all the time, and it's so hard with an Italian concept to satisfy everyone, because everybody has their own perception of what Italian food means and what, you know, what region they may have visited, and
or is
that
it
kind of creates their
red sauce Italian. Like, what
or
is
they
it?
Grew up in New Jersey,
and, right? They need a red sauce joint stat.
So, kind of getting back to the, you know, authenticity and what drives us. It's basically we're looking at regional Italian cuisine that works in Central Texas with what we have available. So there's a lot of overlap with, you know, what grows here and what grows in Italy. But of course, Italy's a long country, so north to south, and the cuisine of Sicily probably does not map on to Texas, because a lot of what's available seafood wise there, we just can't get here. And I don't really want to fly in, you know, specialty fish just to kind of like satisfy that, that type of concept. So we're looking at, you know, dishes in Tuscany, Calabria, you know, of course, Calabria has the sort of cucina povera, like the kind of peasant cuisine that you're working with just fewer ingredients and just trying to make them as good as you can. There's also the heat element, which is interesting. So, so that's a region
really
that we're
looking does
at.
Translate over to Texas.
Yes.
Yeah. 100%.
So we don't really want to do fusion. So it's not going to be like a, like brisket and jalapeno pizza or
what happened to fusion? That was such a 90s thing.
And the Asian fusion restaurants, yes.
And I'm okay with it being moved on.
I was gonna say let's bring it back.
I don't know. I feel like I did grow up with fusion. I grew up eating, you know, a German taco, and everybody's like, what's a German taco? And I'm like, well, it's a tortilla with a sausage and sauerkraut on it. And you can put both mustard and salsa on it. It's delicious. Highly recommend.
Yeah, but that's nostalgic. We're just going to have a nostalgic fusion thing happening soon. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Start that TikTok trend there, Evelyn. These are the kind of people that I have on the Southern Fork, where the anchor in place and the ingredients that come from the place really help organize the restaurant, help organize a menu, the seasonality. You know, Fredericksburg, I think, is a good intersection because you have a lot of visitors, but you also have people that are willing to try something if they know you and you are known in this community.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the example I would use is our wine program at Otto's, for example, because we have a lot of very difficult to pronounce German, Austrian wines. And you would think that people would just be like, I don't want to touch any of this. Just get me my
Merlot,
you know, Napa Cab or whatever. And of course, we have plenty of people that have those preferences.
Ronnie Strong Chardonnay.
Yes. But a lot of our guests come in with a really open mind. And even if they think all Riesling is sweet, for example, we're able to talk them through dry Rieslings or even off dry Rieslings. Maybe there's a little bit of residual sugar, but they just come in open-minded and they try a lot more wine and food than your average American would be expected to do.
That's a fun diner to take care of.
So much fun.
And it's always really fun to hear a Texas accent go for Blaufränkisch.
Gewürztraminer.
Or Gewürztraminer.
I was like going to use that example. or a South Carolina accent. Or a muddled North Carolina, South Carolina accent like I have now. Trying to say Gewürztraminer.
You nailed it. That was good.
That's good. But just it only took me 5 minutes because I had to say it so slow. So it's fun, but you're always chasing. You're running. You're catching up. Like we were talking off mic, you're being proactive, but also catching up all the time. What's making you hungry? I mean, why do you keep doing this? You could just chill for a minute.
That's a question I ask myself every day. Just what am I doing? So I wish I had an answer. Money is a motivator. There's no doubt that I'm a businessman, which is kind of weird to say, but yeah, I'm in business. I'm opening businesses. So of course there's a profit motive behind it, but we have 100+ employees. So I have to serve them. I have a responsibility to them and to their families. Mm-hmm. We have a community that we're serving. We have tourists that are coming here, and I take a lot of pride in providing a good experience. We don't provide a good experience 100% of the time. We strive for that, of course. But those are the motivating factors, I would say.
Yeah, 100%. I think growing up here, I never thought that I would want to live in Fredericksburg, raise a family in Fredericksburg, work in Fredericksburg. I was kind of like, okay, how far away can I get and how quickly? Just life kind of taught me and showed me that, Fredericksburg is a wonderful place to be. And for me, I feel like my motivation is to continue to grow the experiences that we have to offer in Fredericksburg. I think it's to continue pushing the dialogue in lots of different areas. What is small town? What does that mean? What can it be? Because I think there are a lot of misconceptions, but I think that there's so much room for growth. I think
we forgot about the kids.
The kids are great too.
The kids are nice.
They're nice. Kids.
Yeah, that was like, well, that should be the first thing that you say is like, oh, it's my children. I do it all for my children.
Too late. I'm keeping all that.
Sorry, girls.
10 years from now, they'll listen to this.
They'll be like, mm-hmm, I see where this therapy session about
money
came
first.
From. Money first, me fourth. But I was going to ask you, Evelyn, because raising women, mm-hmm. raising girls, mm-hmm. there's still such a struggle, a perception from people that don't have any business saying, making ideas about what's happening inside your family, saying things. What importance do you put on showing your daughters that you are a business person, mm-hmm. that you are working outside the home mm-hmm. and balancing that life with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. Growing up, my mom was primarily a stay-at-home mom, so I definitely got to see and experience what that meant for her. That's a job too, and I think that being able to do that is not something that people should take for granted or should look down upon. I just knew that for me personally, that was it. I think I tried to be a stay-at-home mom for 2 weeks and failed miserably. So that didn't work. I think that there is such an incredible opportunity for women to empower each other and to teach the next generation that, you really can do anything you set your mind to. There's so many fantastic people that I can think of. Our friend Julia Poplawski, for example, is a butcher. She's like one of the best butchers that I've ever seen. And talk about being in an industry that is male dominant. But she can break down huge animals and is just so graceful and skilled, and it's beautiful. So I think that that's definitely something that we try to instill in our girls, is that there is so much beauty in things that just kind of like are like, oh, that's a boy thing. But it's like, no, there's still this incredible, wonderful, joyful experience to be had. Mm-hmm. As a businesswoman, it's definitely my role, I think, to be an advocate for other women in the industry and to talk about, you know, what's it like to breastfeed and pump? How are you going to time that? And being forward thinking about creating environments where, you know, we talk about maternity leave, where we give our employees maternity leave, paternity leave, where we have, you know, a room where they can pump, where we talk about postpartum depression. I think that's an opportunity to actually have conversations, and something that John and I have, you know, kind of ongoing, and definitely to be able to share our struggles with our children, I think is important. I think a lot of my friends sometimes think that I'm just hanging out, having champagne and eating caviar all day, which there are days that that does happen. Still working, but you know, somebody had to do that. But there are some days where, you know, we're setting up huge events or getting ready to open another restaurant, and it's nitty and gritty, and you have to kind of talk about those struggles too.
Mm-hmm. What's one aspect of each one of your personalities that mesh with a part of your job? What's one part of you that just really works with it?
I'm very playful. So not always the most professional, which is, you know, there's issues there for sure. So it's a blessing and a curse, but one of our core values is have fun. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, with guests in the restaurant, I try not to take things too seriously, or at least I try to take the important things seriously and then have fun with the rest of it. So
like putting blue cheese and leftover camembert and
yeah, we just cheesecake. Just play around.
Yeah. I love the way an experience will unfold itself. And I think as a brand director, you really have to be able to put yourself in your guests' shoes and kind of think about like, ooh, what does that couch feel like? Or what's that napkin going to look like? What is this place going to smell like? You know, and those are all the things that bring me joy, kind of drives John insane, because he's like, I really don't care about what color that is. Just like pick one, because those are all shades of blue, Evelyn. And I'm like, no, but it has to be the right one. So
what's one thing keeping you up at night right now, both of you?
The economy, big time. So Fredericksburg actually did really well during the pandemic because it was perceived as a safe destination for people that were concerned about COVID. And then the people that weren't concerned about COVID were like, oh, it's open. So we kind of got kind of the best of both worlds. And, you know, our numbers, we were just hitting crazy numbers in 2020, 2021. And this year it just fell off a cliff. So hopefully it's not because of anything that we're doing wrong, but we can see, you know, prices going up. The number of tourists coming to town is going down. People are less spendy. So it's definitely a huge concern. We're in a fortunate position because we have, you know, within our group, we have a coffee shop all the way up to fine dining. So we can kind of see where people's like spending habits are. Yeah. So the coffee shop is doing fine, but our fine dining is hurting. So we can definitely see the effects of, I mean, I don't even know if they've said recession or not, but
it feels like it.
Kind of feels like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's a completely different tangent. I'm like vigilante censorship. But I feel like it's very bizarre to me that in these small towns now we have like these like book banning groups. People that are like, oh, take that book off the shelves. It's kind of racy. And I'm just, you know, I don't know. I feel like growing up in a small town, books were my escape. Books were my eye into the world. And there are so many things that I think books do for us, as a society, that their value, is something that we can't put a price on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have the opportunity to present this last question to only my Southern Fork guests, and that is that I have a magic picnic basket. Now, this is my dream meal scenario question for you. I want to bring you some things that bring you life. So inside this time traveling picnic basket, I can put something in there that somebody made for you years ago that you just want one more taste of. I can source for you and I can cook a little bit. And I would love for you to, since you work together, build a business together, raise a family together, I want you to build a basket together and put some of those favorite things in there. So what can I put in?
I'm just thinking back to when I lived in Budapest. I was 18 years old, which is the drinking age over there. So I would just take the train into the middle of the city and then go to the big central market that they have. It's kind of a landmark there, and just get a loaf of white bread, a dry sausage, and two beers, and then go to the park. And that was the happiest time of my life. So that would be that's my contribution. Or
I have three things. One, and one we can still get, but I highly recommend if any of your listeners are ever in this area and they find themselves thinking, oh, it's a Thursday through Saturday and I kind of want some lunch or dinner, drive to Mason, Texas, and go get yourself some chips and queso at this little taqueria called Santos Taqueria. John took me there for the first time after I'd taken the LSAT because I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And that basket of chips and that queso was just kind of one of those aha moments where I was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't be a lawyer. So
that's a powerful queso.
That's some mighty fine queso. The second thing is a loaf of white bread from Dietz Bakery. It was one of the local bakeries here in Fredericksburg that I grew up with. And you had to like wake up at 6 o'clock and be in line no later than 6:30 to get your loaf of bread. And there was just the most incredible smell and aroma to it. And I guess the third thing, since you said it was a time traveling picnic basket, is I would really want to, I guess more like want to see it, not necessarily like eat it, but I feel like we always see the crazy meals that like the British monarchy ate, or like just like the royals ate, like King Henry,
and the
peacocks and that whole situation. So I'd really just want to see it.
Okay. Well, and since you know, that's a heavy basket, I'm going to ask you for the beverage.
Beverage? Oh, shoot. Champagne. Just no other beverage that's like it.
It's true. And what time is it? I feel like it's always time for champagne.
It is always any time of day. I mean, it's a cliche, but it really just is. It matches every moment. Yeah. I don't know how it pairs with dry sausage necessarily.
I'm pretty sure it pairs quite well.
We'll make it work.
Yeah, I think I've paired that before. Well, if people want to learn more about Evelyn and John and their community of businesses here in Fredericksburg, Texas, that really make me feel so comfortably at home when I come and visit, and including Hoffman House, which is where we're sitting right now, in a beautiful library full of books. Yes. Thank you, Evelyn. And just perfect Fredericksburg style. You can go to thesouthernfork.com. Per usual, I'm going to have links there so you can see the faces behind the voice. If you like what you hear, I am traveling all over to find you nice little eddies of culinary deliciousness, including a cheesecake at a German bistro in the middle of Texas. Thanks so much for taking time to chat with me and to drink Manhattans the other night. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll pop the champagne later.
Sounds good.
Here we go.
Hello and welcome to Talking with My Mouthful. I have a little bit of fall allergies today, so I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I always get a little bit of it, but when a hurricane passes through, it whips up all of that leaf mold and pollen or whatever is happening in the fall that gets me, and it's been a little intense here for the last few days. But I wanted to address the fact that maybe some of you that are listening to this podcast, and maybe even some of you from Texas, don't consider Texas to be a southern state. But I would say that it definitely has, in many ways, a southern disposition. And, well,
it's my show. And I really, really like the excuse to go to Texas. I like any excuse to visit Texas because breakfast tacos are wonderful. In Fredericksburg, I had some really great wine. It's in the middle of Texas wine country. So you're going to want to listen something like a little more focused on wine coming up in the next few weeks. But if you're interested in taking a trip to Fredericksburg, there is an immense amount of lodging there these days. Evelyn and John and I recorded in the Hoffman House, which is their boutique inn property. And there are other inns and there are other independent hotels. But this trip, I stayed in a short-term rental. There are more than 1,500 short-term rentals in Fredericksburg, and that is something that's really exploded in a lot of the places that I visit. That discussion and implication is another discussion for another day, but this particular guest house was so quiet and relaxing. The bed was really comfortable. There was a beautiful back porch with a swing. It was a million degrees, so I didn't spend that much time out there. There was even a home office, so work was easy. And you know I like a good kitchen. And although I was eating out most of the time, that kitchen was appointed amazingly well. Y'all, there was a Smeg toaster. So if you know, you know. And Smeg, just heads up, I really love that Dolce & Gabbana limited edition toaster that you have out now. So call me. But anyway, I digress. My guest house was called True House, H-A-U-S, and it's managed by a company, Escape to Fredericksburg. Jill was really easy to work with. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. And I hope you like Zyrtec as much as I do right now, and I'll be here next week. Until then, cheers.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?